So there are some things in this world and in this life that you can't unlearn, right? A lot of these things are very meaningless, like the examples that I will give you in about 1 second. You ever see FedEx trucks? You know the arrow between the big E and the little X? Have you ever seen it before? Is your mind being blown right now? And now you'll never unsee it for any other time in your life. Every time you see the FedEx truck, you won't be able to see anything but the blank space in between the letters. I'm sorry. Very meaningful. Absolutely, the sarcasm should be dripping. But again, other things, they catch your attention, and they're the kind of things that you just like can't help but share with other people, right? These life-changing, you can't unlearn it kind of things. One example that happened to me recently is actually boxes of tissues. This is a white box of tissues. You can see the color of the tissue. It's kind of, the lighting is a little bit tough, but that's okay. White box of tissues. Did you know? I did not. My wife told me and I didn't believe her. And it was an ongoing thing for several weeks. And then it happened to me and my life changed forever. And so I apologize, Kelsey, thank you for teaching me such great things. Did you know that tissue companies actually change the color of tissue as you get near the bottom of the box? I had no idea. It like blew my mind. I had to tell everybody in the office, and I like went around with my tissue box to like every office, like, did you see this? Have you seen this? And I probably annoyed them to no end, but it was still hilarious. So again, it's this realization of these silly things that change your perspective. You can't unlearn this. Now you're gonna go home and take all the tissues out of your box. You see, did I get the lucky Wonka one? Is this the one? Is this it? I don't know. So again, I apologize for all the tissues that could potentially be wasted on this day. But again, it's these things, they have no meaning. Right, but there's still things that we notice. A third one, I'll give you this example, is the key fobs for your car. Mine, at least, I don't know about yours. There's a certain combination of the buttons that if you push it, it rolls down the windows. I did not discover this, my toddler did, and it freaked me out. I was terrified. I was like, someone's getting into my car, what's going on? Who did this? I don't know. But again, it's the kind of things that you don't want to learn in the worst context. At least it wasn't raining, that was good. But at the end of the day, it's all of these things, these examples, they're yes, they change our perspective. Yes, there are, you know, facts that do something, I guess. Changes the color of tissue, that's something. From white to off-white, hooray. I don't know, but all of these things are inconsequential, right? They lack the meaning. They lack the things that we're really searching for, and yet they're still things that we go on our little crusades about. I still paraded around the church office this week showing everybody my box of tissues. I still did it, I promise. But again, what would happen or what would change if these kinds of things, these things that you can't unlearn, you can't unsee, if they were truly filled with meaning as well, right? You see, humans, we're looking for something. I think three things, and yeah, you could probably change the way you phrase it, but I think they kind of boil down to these three. We're looking for worth, we're looking for belonging, and we're looking for meaning. The pursuit of these things and the sources of each really matter, because we could go to any number of places to look for that worth, belonging, and meaning, but truly there's only one place that answers those questions in the satisfying way that humans are really after. Not a hollow or a shadow, a hollow picture or our understanding, but a true, deep, limitless kind of way that we can wrap our entire beings around. It should come to no surprise, even at this time of year, that we direct our focus a little bit, right? This isn't a Thanksgiving message, so to speak, but in some ways it kind of is. As we direct our focus towards what we're thankful for, all of those things amount to the source, right? Where do those things come from? And we come back to this really simple statement that holds a whole lot of meaning, that we have an opportunity, that we can give all of ourselves to God because he gave us worth. He designed us to belong, and he wants everyone to know and be changed by that truth. This statement, again, is a bold one to make because it's claiming that I can answer these three things that every human is looking for. And so I don't say these things, willy-nilly. It's actually a result of things that I've experienced. But more than that, it's things that I've read. And looking into God's word, I think we'll see the same things in this one really simple exchange between Jesus and a group of people. We'll see just how comical, I guess, in some ways, but also so momentous, how Jesus responds to these kinds of questions, the things like worth and belonging and meaning, And he answers them in such a way that we didn't even know that we needed to think about it like that. In fact, he gives us, he has the respect for people to give people the space to think about it for themselves. That's what I want to do this morning, is to kind of have a time to pause and to consider for ourselves, what does this really mean to me? Regardless of where I am on a faith journey, to say I'm deeply connected to God, I feel like I've made this commitment to follow him and to be saved by him, I asked him to change my life and to save me from my sin, or that this is something you're just exploring, regardless of where you are, all of these things kind of go down the same road, to see how Jesus gives us this space, a dot, 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 to consider for ourselves, what does this really mean? And so that's where I want to jump into our passage this morning. It's in Matthew chapter 22, and we'll start at verse 15. So I'll give you just a second to get there. I know we're jumping in kind of right in the middle of where Jesus is at in his ministry, but it all, again, is what we need to understand is that he's already been kind of on the scene, so to speak. People understand what he's about. He's began to, you know, he's done his big teaching sessions, those famous sermons, those big miracles. And at this point, the different groups that Jesus has been contending with have now made their decision. They're going to get him. That's their desire, is either, you know, to start with here, to discredit him, to dishonor him, and then to get to the point where no one will listen to him again. That's the intent, and you'll read that in a second. There's also two groups mentioned, and just before we even get into the text, I'll just mention them real quick. We have the Pharisees. A lot of people have tended to hear about them because Jesus talks to them a lot. But there's also another, the Herodians. So a Pharisee, a respecter of God's law, would understand it in and out. A Herodian would be someone that the Roman government probably pays off, if we're being honest, to be really good, jolly Roman supporters. And so they were at complete odds with each other, right? Because we have no concept of what bipartisan political systems look like. But again, that's what the picture that you can paint in your head, is they didn't get along, they didn't understand each other, they didn't like each other, and yet they came united for one purpose in this passage: get rid of Jesus, make him ineffective, let people discredit him. So let's jump into the text now, Matthew 22 and verse 15. Then the Pharisees went out, and they laid plans to trap him in his words, and they sent their disciples to him along with the Herodians. Again, I'll pause, right? This really significant two bipartisan group coming together to try to stop Jesus, discredit him. They had a problem where Jesus was telling people about good news that was confusing them from what their goals were and actually directing them towards God and what God actually wanted for his nation and for the world to understand and see. So yes, it was posing a problem for them and their agenda. And so at this point, they are ready to come together to try to stop Jesus, to try to get him to be discredited, try to get him at the very best, in their opinion. Maybe he'll even die. That would be, for them, that would work out so well. So again, continuing on from here. They sent their disciples to him along with the Herodians. I like this because they didn't even send like the main guys. They sent like the B team. They're like, go ahead, like, you know, those young guys, go ahead and go in there. I don't know if it just looked better. Maybe it like looked a little bit more innocent. Like, hey, Mr. Teacher, we know that you're a man of integrity and the way that you teach the way of God in accordance with the truth. I'm dramatizing a little bit. But again, I think that there is something to this, right? That there's some attempt to create some kind of facade, some kind of conversational tripping. Right, so that maybe he'll slip up and say something that Jesus didn't really mean, or that he said something so firm enough that they can take it and run with it out of context. Right, that was the main goal, again, trying to take the things that he's saying and trying to create a discredit situation, or best yet, a treason situation where the Roman government would actually do something to him for them. So finally, cutting to the chase here, we know that you're a man of integrity, right, buttering him up, saying all these good things, but the hilarious thing about all of this, that you aren't swayed by others, you don't pay attention to who they are. They're commenting on the fact that Jesus sees through people's motives. I don't know why that would be a good idea to point out, because their motives were not good. So I'm not really sure what they were going for here. But at the end of the day, for us as readers, it's really kind of funny, because they're pointing out the very same things that really matter. That what Jesus is going to say in a second, and the questions that he poses and the examples that he gives, are actually going to create a space for them in the most respectful way, for someone who's trying to like just destroy his reputation, he deals with them so honorably and so respectfully. And in our case, giving us, again, the respect to consider this story and to understand it in a context of seeing it for what it is and reading into these objects and these examples he uses, it changes everything for us because Jesus gives us the space to consider. So again, Jesus, he sees through the facades, he sees through the pretense, and then they get to their question. So tell us then, verse 17, what is your opinion? Is it right to pay imperial tax to Caesar or not? This question was like, oh my goodness, it was a goldmine question, right? It was the best possible scenario because whether Jesus said, yes, pay taxes, or no, don't pay taxes, if you said yes, then you lose the support of all the Jewish people and they discredit him and it becomes like potentially a riot. I don't really know at this point. And then if you say, no, don't pay taxes to Caesar, then you have everybody against you on the Roman side of things saying it's treason and there's, again, grounds for arrest and maybe something worse than that. At the end of the day, this was the perfect question. There is no way out. They have trapped him in his words. Oh, no. Jesus, trapped. It never works out well for them. And in the best way. Because again, the love and the honor and the respect that Jesus responds to these people is just, it confounds me. That yes, there's insult, yes, there's opposition on Jesus's end, and we'll read about it in just 1 second, but still, it is so honorable that he gives them the space to think through, do you really mean what you're trying to do here? Is that really what you want to do? So verse 18, this is how Jesus responds in this unanswerable question. But Jesus, knowing their evil intent, as they already mentioned that he could, he said, you hypocrites, why are you trying to trap me? Go show me the coin used for paying the tax. And so they brought him a denarius, and he asked them, whose image is this and whose inscription? I'll pause there. Again, yes, there's some confrontation, but still, they were trying to get him arrested or killed. His response, so civil and so kind, because he was asking them a real question, and Jesus turned it on its face and got to the place where he can actually bring about what's really missing, right? Those same very human things that I brought up at the beginning of the time together, those things like worth and belonging and meaning, Jesus is getting to them now. Because he's trying to help them to see through all the pretense, all the questions and the things that they think they have, or all the objective and the agenda that they're bringing. Jesus says this, verse 21, they reply, right? Whose image is on the coin? Whose inscription? A denarius being a common coin in Roman culture, something like a day's wage, a changed value over time. But at the end of the day, it was something that people were familiar with. It wouldn't be too hard to find. So they replied, Caesar's. That's whose image and inscription is on that coin. So he said to them, so give back to Caesar what is Caesar's and to God what is God's. This pause here, because you'll notice, especially if you have a red letter, like Jesus doesn't say more. So powerful. It's that dot, 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 that ellipsis of taking a moment and letting it soak in. Because the comment that Jesus brings about and the statement that he makes about giving to Caesar what's Caesar's and to God what is God's, it poses a hidden question. Have you noticed? It's not just a question of about the coin, right? The coin has nothing to do with those three things that humans are after, worth, belonging, meaning. Instead, it's pointing to something that's really obvious. It's the what in the world is Jesus actually talking about? And in fact, what are they missing? Because I think there is something that they're missing. And Jesus does too. Give to God what is God's. Who is he talking about? What is he talking about? We're getting to the place where Jesus begins to, again, get to the root of these problems. He starts with worth. Bringing up the coin, I think that's the very first thing that would be on people's minds, right? If we had a coin and we were thinking about how much is this value, we would start thinking, okay, well, according to our currency and our current economy, it's worth this amount. The value of a coin is dependent on a few things, though, right? It's dependent on the stability of a nation, the vibrancy, some kind of reach of that nation, right? To the point where it's decided upon by some people that are more important than me. And at the end of the day, it has a set value or worth, and that's really great. So just to be really clear, Jesus isn't trying to compare what God values most to just like a coin, to the point where he's saying like, yeah, God cares about things that do work, or God cares about something that amounts to something, or God cares about what turns out right, or what's able to fit in or do good or be nice, or what has enough demand. That has nothing to do with what Jesus's point is. Instead, it's actually really the opposite, that what God values is what God made and what God put his image and his inscription on in the first place. It's people. It's the people that God made. The hidden question in all of this is, what is God's? A better question is, who is God's? It's everyone that he made. So yeah, there's a coin. Yeah, it's got Caesar's name on it or whatever in his picture. But there are people with God's image on them and God's inscription on them. And we're led to this deep rabbit hole now of this incredible reality and truth where this ellipsis comes into play. Dot, dot, dot. He pauses. He lets them consider, I want to do the same thing. Because there's another side of that coin. To a Jewish person, that coin, that denarius with Caesar's inscription, would be the coin of the oppressor, right? The reality of it is it would be painful to use and to have, because it's everything that means we are not our own, our nation isn't what we want it to be. We're missing all of these things. We're forgetting who we are as people. And yet they're reminded. There's a ruling part of this. That there's a statement to be made, a submission, or even a surrender. And yet for us, this is the perfect comparison. Not because we have a limited value determined by an economy, but because our value is determined, like a denarius, by the kingdom by which it represents, God's. That kingdom, its longevity, its objective worth, it's limitless, it's forever. That in no way is that jeopardized by anything that could ever happen. And that coin by itself, again, great comparison. Because again, like I said, the other side is that there is a submission, a surrender to it as well. That we are not our own. We don't belong to ourselves, but that we belong to God. There's a possession part of it. Who is God's? What is God's? How do I even give it to him? These are the kind of questions that this ellipsis, this dot, dot, dot that Jesus leaves us with, that we're left with. And in the best possible way, because we eventually get to the place where we come to, God, I do need to surrender. I do need to give all. This is why. It's because you gave me worth. And so I'll say it like this in the first person on person, to say I on purpose. I give all because God gave me worth. This is why. This is why even this weekend that we're thanking God and it's amounting to, again, all this list of things, it's because he gave them. We're so thankful, God. Our gratitude is not misplaced. It's towards you. We're so thankful for what you have done and what you've given us. And so I want to invite you to consider, is this true for you? Is this first person? Or is it second? You're saying, yeah, it's true for you. But now to say first person, I give all. I surrender. I devote everything. A lot of times we talk about it from the very passive perspective, where we think about, God, come and take what you want, but leave what's left over. That would be great. But go ahead and take what you want. No, to say no. There's an active part of this, of surrendering, to say, God, no, I want to give you. I want to give it to you actively. God, whatever it is, everything, all the parts of me, everything that you've made me to be, I want it to be yours, because that's the way that you've designed me, the way that you've made me, and it's because you gave me the worth that I have. He ascribed it when he made us with that image of God, and then he did it again in an even deeper and more beautiful way. Because we tend to focus right on this why relationship, this vertical one between God and us. And that's important, because that's the source of all the other relationships, those horizontal ones that we have with others. And so it starts here to think through, even from the beginning of the story of the Bible, to think through God made people. And he made them perfectly with the image of God instilled. It was not a mistake that he made us like him. And so when he did, it was perfect. I think about all the time this example of Toy Story. You ever watch Toy Story? And he got Woody, so lovable. But on his boot, I do not have it, Andy. But on his boot, it's got Andy on it. You remember this part? And to him, this is so meaningful. It's this identity. It's who he is. It's what he's made for. It's his kid, he talks about, right? It's everything to Woody. This is not the perfect one-to-one ratio for understanding. But to say something similar happened with God and us. that when he designed us, when he made us, when he created, he put his name on us, his inscription, signature, and his image. He made us unlike any other part of creation. That in every way, there's no Thanksgiving dinner for dolphins. I'm sorry, they don't take a moment to be thankful or have gratitude because God made us different. We are unique in that we desire those things, that worth, the belonging, the meaning. God made us to seek him. So thankful. And so when we think about that beginning, it should break our hearts because it didn't stay that way. That we were designed to be connected to God for eternity, forever, but that image of God was corrupted. That connection to him, that signature, it was broken, but it wasn't abandoned. And that's the most important part, is that it didn't stop there. God actually protected that, and he pursued those people that he made with the image of God instilled, and he began to redeem them. He had a plan, and it all started with this reclamation or going to reclaim that through Jesus. And that's where we find that worth, that God saw it fit to make an exchange, to have Jesus die in my own place. The debt of death that I owed would be paid by the Son of God, someone who's never done anything wrong, no sin, and yet he became sin for me. This incredible substitution, it begins to restore things, because when I trust in that death and resurrection of Jesus, when he died and came back to life, it changes everything for me. My destiny is no longer separation. It's no longer an exile or a casting away. Now it's bringing back together. Like an adopted son, I'm welcomed into the home and into the family of God. And this incredible opportunity that we have, it comes back to this y-axis is so important, this vertical connection with God, all of it pointing to this. We can know this about me, the worth that God ascribed to me when he made me, when he saved me, but now we can look towards the we. The natural consequence of God giving me that value, that worth, is that all people, we come to realize this, all people, everyone that God ever made, that same worth applies. The same value. It's something that we can't unlearn, just like at that beginning, but this time it matters. It changes everything. It ain't no tissue color. Right? And everything, it's something that when we grasp it, it's something we can't lose, we can't unhear, we can't unlearn. We now begin to live a different kind of life. We're changed by the truth that God values me, that he invited me to come and belong and be with him, but also to everyone that he made. We give everything to God. And as a result, it changes what we value, where our worth lies. It's no longer in the things that I can do. No aspect of good works or good things that I can do amounting up to maybe I can impress or get in a better standing with him. No, instead, we lose all of that pretense and we become simply at the feet of God, people who are going to be used by him to do something incredible. Now, to take that vertical relationship and to spread that good news all the way horizontally. We think through this connection we have with other people and we see others with that same worth. It changes everything, like I said. It creates a deep desire for us to see other people know him like we do. We see the breadth of that horizontal axis, because here's what's crazy and we don't often think about, is that God didn't make coins or statues or paintings on a wall. That wasn't his climax of creation. It was people. And that encompasses the full extent of all of creation all around the world, all peoples, all languages, all cultures, everywhere on this earth, and he designed them to do two things, belong with him, but also with each other. That's an incredible and very, again, like mind-blowing kind of not unlearnable kind of thing. Because now we have this opportunity, a responsibility, and a great one to honor God in the way that we invite others to belong as well. That yes, we belong to God, that we are his, but now we invite others to be a part of the same belonging because it's what we were made for. It's what we were designed for. And so we see what Jesus did to bring that about, and we can imitate those very same things. We see what Jesus did, and we celebrate it this whole next month, right? That he arrived. He came in the flesh. He did something that was unspeakably confusing and unbelievably beautiful, that he left everything perfect, came to this messy place, and encountered the kind of situations that would make us just run away screaming. In every way, it was betrayal, murder, frustration, misunderstanding. It was in every way the worst possible scenario for him. And yet he entered into it willingly. He arrived in the flesh. And not only that, but it was physical. It wasn't just at a distance. He touched people that no one has any business touching medically. He hung out with people that no one should ever be with, people like me. And yet that's our God, right? It's all of this is incredible. And so we imitate Jesus in the same ways. We realize we can do that too. We can arrive for people. We can embody ourselves, be physically present for people that maybe we would least expect our care and concern to be with them. And yet that's how God made us to be. Not only that, he didn't just come and then become a condescending force of nature, because that's something he could do too. If anyone had the ability to condescend, it was Jesus. And yet he came and he empathized. He entered into empathy with people. Incredible. We can do the same thing though. We imitate Jesus in the way that he identified with people. He went through difficult things in order to empathize with people. It's something that we realize we have this blessed gift of going through hard things just so we could comfort other people. Thank you, God. And then finally, in the most exciting, climactic, incredible story of all of self-sacrifice, we have him, Jesus. He didn't just show up. He didn't just empathize. He gave everything. He gave up everything. There was nothing that he didn't give up. He sacrificed himself to save me and to save you and to save people and to invite all of them to belong, not just to him, but also with each other. We think about this, and it kind of gets to this last point, right? We give all of ourselves. We give all of ourselves to God because he gave us worth. He designed us to belong, and he wants everyone to know and be changed by that truth. He wants everyone to know and be changed by that truth. So I think about this horizontal connection, right? This one that stretches around the world to the point of every person and culture. I'm reminded of just what's happening in our world, thinking of terms like people groups, right? These are groups of people with the same culture, with the same language and the same history. Of that, I don't know if you know how creative God is. There's 17,286 of them. You would probably be one of them, right? Maybe there's a few represented here today. Of that 7,250 of them would be considered unreached, right? So that would mean there's 2% of them are Christians. That would mean people that they can go and talk to about who God is and the truth that I'm inviting you to today about how Jesus gave everything for them. In other words, there's practically, and God can do what he wants, but practically there's no chance that they would actually hear about the good news about Jesus. As I think through my life, my response to these kinds of things, my ellipsis or my dot, dot, dot time of thinking through what does this mean for me, the way that I have applied this, my family has applied this, has a lot to do with the transition that we're making. This isn't an info session. This isn't an info dump. And by no means do I want you to consider this a me time kind of thing, but I do want you to hear because how we've applied it, I think, is something that applies to what God has called us to. But I think that there's something that we can all learn from it. This is what's changing our drive to change, right? Something that we're going into and changing. Because we've come to understand a need. That people are coming from parts of the world that the truth has not been told. Of that 7,250 unreached people, that's 3.4 billion. It's like 41% of the population or something like that. It's a lot of people. And as we think through what God is doing, in bringing those people actually inside of our own borders in our country, we see that there's an opportunity to invest in that time, in what God's doing right now, because there are people that have not been told or been invited to belong that we can now go to their doors. We can have them in our home. We can sit down over a cup of coffee and tell them what they haven't heard. These terms honestly don't do it justice because they're people. But the refugee, the immigrant, again, people, they have immense value, a worth that's equal to mine in God's eyes, and yet they've been invisible to me for a long time. In many ways, right? But God has opened up my eyes and seen that as a need that I needed to respond to. It's everything that I want to be and that I want God to create in me, right? It's understanding that worth that God gives. It's applying it to all people. It's grasping how I belong and then inviting others to belong with me in regards to belonging to God. The truth is that there are people that have not been invited. They've never had the opportunity to respond like we're given today. Now, my family's response to this was to go, right? We felt like it was our role to this insatiable response about what God has done to us and for us, to go and tell other people in this way, to go to Atlanta, Georgia, where there's been a concentration of people that fall into that category, and we become convinced that that's what God wants us to do. And so it's with that transition and change that we're seeing God, again, continue to expand our understanding, the way that we're doing this, the way that we love. And again, it's this goal to settle in a place, to find people that are, again, haven't heard, and to give them access to that good news. We're excited to meet these people where they are. And in addition to more like formal opportunities, we also anticipate just opening up our homes to doing those things I said before, being good neighbors, being a hosting family, hosting gatherings, spending time with people and the people groups that we're meeting. So we desire in every way to be invested in this, and this is why we're so excited, but also to connect you to it, right? Literally, in the sense that you guys would be hearing the things that we're doing, praying for it and things like that, but also in the sense that we want you to think of us as models, catalysts for opportunities for you to do the very same things, right? To respond to these kinds of truths about worth, belonging, meaning, and to say, I can't help but be that guy with the tissue box waving it around poor Pastor Lucas's face, saying, look at this off-white tissue, right? To say, no, this is what God has done, and this is who he is. I am his, and I'm so thankful that he saved me, right? We're so excited about this change, and again, I hope you don't take this time as a any kind of info dump or anything, but for us, this application, the way that we've applied these things, it's been found in that ellipsis, this time to consider, what does it really mean that I am God's? How is it that I give to God? What is God's? There's a sense that it'll look different for each person, but at the same time, there's very much a universality to it too, that we are his and that he inspires us to do the kinds of things that please him. And so as I think through just what our church is all about, in this invitation that we make often for you to pursue a life-changing relationship with Jesus, I was disappointed to hear the last verse in our text, the last verse in the passage we're reading. I think you'll feel the same way. So this is verse 22. After all that, after what Jesus said, this is what they did. When they heard this, they were amazed. So they left him and they went away. It's the worst reaction ever. They came with an agenda, with an idea of what they were going to do, that they were going to leave Jesus ineffective, helpless, maybe even arrested. And Jesus gave them something to think about. They went away. They left him. When we're left with things to think about, with that space, that dot, 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 don't leave Jesus. Go to him. Pursue him. When we're left with the space to consider, what does this mean to give to God what is God's? Or to get to the place where I'm just not sure. Don't leave God. Don't leave Jesus and go away. Go after him. He's the one with the answers. So please, as we consider again what we say often at our church, pursue a life-changing relationship with Jesus. Understand the worth that God gave you, and then thus all people. Understand the image of God that he made you in, the value that he gave, and the belonging that he offers that we so deeply desire. Because the truth is, there are so many different places that we can go for that belonging, and yet he's the only one that truly satisfies, right? We can get hollow pictures or little feelings or glimpses, but God alone, he satisfies. Will you pray with me? God, regardless of where we are with you, we do give this time because we want to be people that are pursuing you. You've given us the space to consider, what does this mean to be yours? What does this mean to be someone that was made by you and to give you what you made? What does that look like? God, you've given us that ellipsis, that dot, 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 that place and that space to consider it for myself. God, help me not to run away from you. Help me to run after you instead. Help me to be completely submitted and surrendered in all the things that I'm saying and doing, because God, this is what you've made me to be and do, to be someone who pursues you. God, again, I don't know where we all are. This could very well be a reminder on the road that we're already on, and it just gives us more motivation to continue on that straight and narrow of following after you and pursuing you every day. Or maybe it's a complete turning point, God, that you've actually called us to something different. God, we have that relationship and that connection with you, that trust that you saved us from our sin, but God, now you want me to pivot and to do something different. God, maybe we have no idea where we are, and it just feels like there's this open field in front of me, and God, I don't know which step to take, which direction is the one to go. God, I'm just looking for the road. I'm looking for the ways to get to you. But God, they said it well, the Pharisees who completely were off track, and yet even they understood, Jesus, it was you. You had the words to the path to God. It was you. You have the answers. You see through the pretense. You see through the facade or the questions or the doubts. And God, those things aren't the same. But God, you see through it all. And all you want is all of ourselves. And God, it's exactly where you want us to be. So God, help us to do that. In your name we pray. Amen.